Proving trust is more important than ever, especially when it comes to your security program. Vanta helps centralize program requirements and automate evidence collection for frameworks like SOC 2, ISO 27001, and more, so you save time and money and build customer trust. And with Vanta, you get continuous visibility into the state of your controls. Join more than 8,000 global companies like Flow Health, Synthesia, and Alica Bank who trust Vanta to manage risk and prove security in real time. Now that's a new way to GRC. Get $1,000 off Vanta when you go to vanta.com/go. That's vanta.com/go for $1,000 off.
You know, AW has a pay-per-view coming up on Saturday. Typically one of its biggest events of the year. It's called Full Gear. And we're going to go through all the matches on the Full Gear card a little bit later on. We'll give predictions and we'll go through the entire thing from start to finish. But tonight was the final Dynamite before that Full Gear card. The last opportunity for AEW to come out of the gate tonight and show you why you should tune in and buy this pay-per-view this weekend. Why should you spend your money on this show? What makes Full Gear a must-see card? We have a main event on Saturday of Jon Moxley and Orange Cassidy for the AEW World Championship. For, as Excalibur put it tonight, control of all elite wrestling. Now, I would like for you to explain to me, what exactly does that mean? For control of all elite wrestling. Does it mean that if Orange Cassidy wins on Saturday, we can actually come up with a storyline that works? Does it mean that we can come up with a story that's actually interesting and engaging? I'm all for that. I'll be the biggest cheerleader in the world for Orange Cassidy if that were the stipulation. What does that mean, though? For control of all elite wrestling, who controls all elite wrestling right now? What does that mean? They're trying their hardest to really portray it as the stakes could not possibly be higher. This is the most important battle in the history of AEW. 5 years of the company, the most important main event in AEW history. There is not a single person out there right now who is watching this show who honestly believes any of that, who honestly believes that this match is important in any way, shape, or form. And if you are somebody who says, oh, well, no, I'm one of these people who believe, you're full of shit. Nobody believes that. And they certainly didn't do anything on this show tonight to really get you excited to see that main event. But the problem is not just with Jon Moxley and Orange Cassidy. The problem is with this entire show that we saw tonight as it relates to all the matches coming up at Full Gear on Saturday. This was a go-home show. The job of the show tonight was to get you excited for the show on Saturday. And I can honestly sit here and tell you what we saw tonight on TBS, that was the worst go-home show in the 5 years that AEW has been producing pay-per-views. As a go-home show, this show fucking sucked. This was as bad as I've ever seen it. Even the segments that were not necessarily terrible, and there were a few of them tonight, some were terrible, even the ones that weren't. I'm not saying that every segment was fucking god-awful. It was a combination of god-awful segments and other segments that on their own were not necessarily bad, but there was nothing on this show that made you go, man, I'm more excited now to tune in on Saturday than I was before the show started tonight. Or that got you really excited, that got your blood pumping. There's this dark cloud that is hanging over so many of these shows. And the best way I can describe it is the word I keep coming back to is cold. Everything just feels cold, like a corpse. Like there's no pulse. There's no life to it. There's no energy. I was happy when I saw the news yesterday that AEW, they finally released their schedule through March for live events. And they're going to be running a series of smaller venues. And I think that's great. I think that's a step in the right direction. I think that's exactly what they need to be doing. Because this is a company that simply cannot fill buildings right now. Unless it is a pay-per-view or their first time in a market for a major event, right? They got a big stadium show coming up in Australia in February. We'll see how tickets sell for that. Texas is coming up next summer. They're going to have some big shows, some stadium shows coming up in 2025. Going to be very interesting to see how the tickets sell for those shows. I actually think that the tickets should sell pretty well for those shows. What I'm talking about are the week-to-week shows that you and I come here, we watch Dynamite every single week. Some of you might watch Collision. Some of you might watch well, let's be honest, nobody's watching fucking Rampage. But you're watching Dynamite every single week, and you see it, you hear it, you feel it every single week. You see it on the show tonight. I'm watching people come out. I'm watching Tony Schiavone stand there and introduce people to crickets. Like there's nobody there. And I sit here and I ask myself, how? How did we get to this point where everything just feels flat? We're not talking about one or two angles or one or two stars. We're talking about consistently across the board with very few exceptions. Everything just feels flat. It's like leaving soda out on the table for 5 days. What happens? Right? The carbonation disappears and the soda goes flat. And that's what it feels like. That's what AEW feels like right now. Flat soda. How did we get to this point? I look at what they did in the main event tonight. Orange Cassidy and Jon Moxley. And what do we have here? A battle for the savior of AEW. Doesn't feel like it to me. We have a TNT championship match. Right? Coming up at Full Gear this weekend. It's going to be Jack Perry defending his title against Daniel Garcia. Daniel Garcia and Matt Menard kidnapped Jack Perry. If you saw Collision on Saturday, they kidnapped him. We got the continuation of that tonight. It was Jack Perry tied to a chair sitting in a warehouse in the middle of nowhere. I thought they were going to torture this man. His scapegoat bus is parked right there. And we have Daniel Garcia threatening this man with a crowbar. And Jack Perry is sitting taped to a chair. He's defenseless. He can't go anywhere. He can't do anything. Go ahead, do it, right? And it makes you think, oh man, he's going to hit this guy with a crowbar. No, he takes a crowbar to the bus. Jack Perry laughs in his face. What does Daniel Garcia do? He leaves. He walks away. Matt Menard has to go chasing after him. Danny, what are you doing? I'm sitting here wondering the same thing. What are you doing here? You kidnap this man. You tape him to a chair. You threaten him. And then he laughs at you and you walk away. And this is the lasting final parting image before we get this big TNT title match on Saturday. What a weird fucking segment that was. We have MJF who's going to be wrestling Roderick Strong, right? Not the match that most people wanted to see. MJF and Adam Cole, that's the play. They're going to save that probably for World's End when they can get MJF back on television in the actual arenas. Then you can do a proper build-up to that match, so I get it. But we're getting MJF and Roderick Strong. Did you see, did you hear the crowd when Tony Schiavone introduced the Undisputed Kingdom? When they walked out there, it was a reaction so silent I thought I was watching a Charlie Chaplin movie, only in color. Said, probably it'll be a really good wrestling match. We get really good wrestling matches from AEW every week. Sell me on this match. Looking up and down here, they probably did a better job on that than they did most of the other stuff on this show. That's not saying much. Chris Statlander and Mercedes Moné. I mean, I can go down the list here. They're going to have a match for the TBS Championship. This was week, what, 3, 4 of Camille the Klutz? You don't think she regrets her decision signing with AEW? She had an NXT contract with her name on it, and she said no. She declined. I thought, okay, cool, but maybe it'll work out for her. I thought this pairing would have been perfect for her. You don't think she doesn't regret her decision right now? Bullshit. She regrets it every single day. How can she not? She goes out there, she's made to look like an absolute fucking fool every single week on TV. Whatever she had going for her is gone. It's gone. And it only took 3 months. Very impressive. Very impressive booking. Mercedes came into this company with so much fanfare, big business in Boston, right? I was so happy just to see her back on TV. She was gone for so long. She had the injury. I'm a fan of her work. Ever since she came into this company, I don't know. I don't know if it's any one thing. Nothing has worked. Nothing has worked. It's gotten to the point now where when she comes out there, I hate to say it, she comes out there and it's almost a Jericho-esque reaction that I have where it's like, get off my TV. I don't want to see this. Never thought I would sit here and say these words, but here we are. And you see examples of this up and down the card. I know a lot of AEW fans don't want to hear it. I don't want to come on here and talk about it. But what am I supposed to do? Come on here and lie? Put a happy face on it like Kenny Omega? Everything's great with AEW. There's nothing wrong with AEW. Praise be Tony Khan. I can't do it. I can't do it. Other people can do it. I can't. I can't do it. And it pains me because it didn't have to be this way, but here we are. So we're heading into a pay-per-view that may end up being really great. AEW has a great track record when it comes to their pay-per-views. But sell me on it. This is it. This is the last audition before the big show on Saturday. This show was embarrassing tonight. It was embarrassing. They have some of the best talent in the world right now on their roster. Loaded, up and down. There's no excuse for this. None. Then we have Big Boom AJ. We have Big Boom AJ and Sid Justice, or whatever the fuck that kid's name is. Right? The Costco guys. The Costco guys. Yeah, how sad things are. The Costco guys have more airtime now this year on AEW television than Athena does. But I guess, hey, they have a bigger social media following than she does, and that's why they wanted to grab them. And since they have a match on the pre-show on Saturday, you had to get them on TV at least once. So we had the Costco guys. It was brief, but we had them on the show tonight as well. They were making an appearance in the back. Boom! Right? That's their thing. Boom. I thought that was Adam Cole's thing. Apparently, it's the Costco guys' thing now. They took it from him. I can't say that Adam Cole has a better tan than them. We're going to talk about that. There's something going on there. But yeah, that's on the pre-show. We got the Costco guys going to show up on Full Gear on Saturday. And they're bringing the Rizzler is going to be there. Yeah, he wasn't on the show tonight. Maybe he was filming a movie like MJF was. He couldn't be there. But he'll be there on Saturday. At least it's on the pre-show. So you can watch it for free. That'll be on YouTube. And we have a Ring of Honor World Championship match that thankfully is not on the pay-per-view this Saturday. That's on the television show next week. Wait until we talk about that segment. Oh, boy. Let's get through this here because we have to talk about this AEW Dynamite show. You know, even the few things on this show, like the opening match, even the few things on this show that I thought were good and that I liked, did not get me excited for the show on Saturday. You know what got me excited? The November Rain video. They aired a portion of it on the show tonight, but it was like a 9-minute video, and they aired that on Collision. Really great job the production team did on that video. That, Guns N' Roses. That was the best sell job that they have done yet for Full Gear. That one 10-minute video that they aired on Collision on Saturday was better than anything they gave us on this show tonight. Inexcusable. This is your AEW Dynamite review for November 20th, 2024. I am the Solemn Monster. We are celebrating 17 years of the Sound Off all month long. Like and subscribe. Super chats are open. I'll be reading your messages. I'm sure you'll have some things to say about this show tonight as well. And if you don't, that's okay too, because I don't blame you. But if there are any, we will get to them as we go along here. Let's talk about this opening of the show, because they did open with an abbreviated version of the November Rain video that we saw on Collision on Saturday, hyping Full Gear. Great stuff. Again, it was only a portion of it. I encourage you, if you did not see the entire video, to go and find it. I would imagine it is on AEW's YouTube channel. I haven't checked. But I would imagine that is where you can find the full video. Opening match here. One of the best things on the entire show. Will Ospreay, Powerhouse Hobbs, Ricochet, and Mark Davis. This was Davis's first match since Wrestle Dream last year. Taking on Kenosuke Takeshita, Kyle Fletcher, Lance Archer, and Brian Cage. We got a brawl at ringside to start. Hobbs confronted Fletcher. Archer pulled Hobbs to ringside, trapped his leg in between the ring steps, and Cage ran Ospreay into the steps. So Hobbs was selling the leg, trainers came over to check on him, and they helped him to the back. He limped his way to the back. So early in this match, Powerhouse Hobbs taken out of the equation for the babyfaces. Ricochet got worked over by the heels during the entire break, but mounted a comeback. Ospreay and Fletcher both tagged in, and we got a very quick-paced sequence here. These two are going to have a match on the pay-per-view this Saturday. Fletcher quickly bailed. Takeshita tagged back in. And Takeshita connected on a Blue Thunderbomb on Ospreay, who kicked out at two. So Fletcher came in to pick up the pieces. And Powerhouse Hobbs, several minutes later, he reappears. He reemerges from the back. He is hobbling around on his one good wheel. Ospreay fought free, made the hot tag. And Hobbs got in. He was running wild with splashes in the corner. Mark Davis tagged in, dodged the Takeshita power drive knee, hit a gut wrench pile driver for two. Fletcher broke the count, and then we got a showdown between the two members of Aussie Open. Fletcher slapped Davis across the face, so Davis shot a double leg on him. Everybody took turns hitting big moves here. That left Ospreay and Fletcher to slug it out. They did a whole crazy series of counters until Ospreay hit a standing Spanish fly. Ospreay was about to wreck Fletcher with a hidden blade when Fletcher pulled Mark Davis in the way. We got some friendly fire here because Will Ospreay connected on a hidden blade to his own partner, and he blasted Davis with it. Ospreay and Fletcher ended up outside the ring. Takeshita lowered the knee pad, and he put Davis away with the power drive knee for the win. Mark Davis better get used to being in that position, down on his back looking up at the lights, because it's going to be happening a lot from here on out. But him eating that hidden blade, and I was already thinking along these lines, but him eating that hidden blade is going to factor into things. I think that ultimately Davis is going to end up with the Callis family. I don't think he's going to separate from them. I don't think he's going to separate from Kyle Fletcher. Why would he? You split Aussie Open up, Mark Davis is done. Stick a fork in him, he's finished. Best thing for him would be to stick with the Callis family. Even if it's just the occasional Aussie Open match and he does some single stuff on his own, for his sake, that would be the best spot, I think, for him to be in. It was a fun sprint. Only two of the eight men in this match are actually on the pay-per-view this weekend. You would think Ricochet and Takeshita would be for the international title. As of this moment, it is not official for the show. It's not listed on the AEW website. It could still be added at the last minute. You know what? I don't even think it has to. You could do it on TV. You got Winter is Coming in the next few weeks. You could do it there. But it is not on the pay-per-view this weekend. Fletcher did not pin Ospreay, but his team did get the win here. Now, I already predicted an Ospreay. I did my predictions originally on Sunday. Talked about it again last night on TNT. I have Ospreay going over, just to give you a little spoiler on the predictions later. I have Ospreay going over on Fletcher. Nothing they did here did anything to change my mind on that. I'm sticking with Ospreay to pick up the win. Excalibur then informed us that the Continental Classic is going to kick off next week. We are not going to know any of the participants outside of the Continental Champion. Obviously, Okada will be a part of the tournament. Outside of him, we're not going to know any of the names until next week. One name that has been floating around in the news is Speedball Mike Bailey. Mike Bailey is no longer with TNA Wrestling. His contract expired with them back at the beginning of the month. He is a free agent. There is talk, I believe, from Fightful. That he is going to be signing with AEW and that he is going to be making that his destination. A lot of people thought, well, maybe that means he's going to be in the Continental Classic. The Continental Classic would be a great place for him to showcase his skills. But according to Mike Johnson, a PW Insider, he is coming in, but he will not be entering into the Continental Classic. Renee was outside in the parking lot with the Hurt Syndicate, who pulled up to the arena in their SUV. MVP announced that Bobby Lashley will compete later tonight. Here we thought he was going to make his in-ring debut on Saturday. In fact, he's going to make his debut on the show tonight, which was a surprise, but okay. Swerve Strickland, all of a sudden, he rushed into camera frame. He popped Lashley in the face with his chain-wrapped fist, and then he walked away laughing. There was a weird audio glitch when he punched him in the face. It was almost as if they muted something. Maybe he said a naughty word. I don't know. I mean, with the way the AEW audio stuff glitches out, it could have just been a fucking production miscue. But it was just very weird. But he left Lashley laying in the parking lot. Up next, it was story time with Adam Cole, who lost to Konosuke Takeshita last week, which means that there will be no match for Adam Cole at Full Gear. No match with MJF, no match with anybody, unless he wants to challenge the Rizzler. My money's on the Rizzler if he wants to do that match. Now, I mentioned Cole before. We got to talk about something. We got to talk about something very important as it relates to Adam Cole, and it's something that is just, it's inescapable. If you have seen this man on television since he came back, it's just, you cannot take your eyes off of it. It's just unavoidable. And that is the fake Tanner that this man is using every single week. There needs to be an intervention. Somebody has to be brave enough to step up to him and say, look, put your hand on his shoulder. Actually, maybe don't do that, because when you pull your hand back, it'll be orange. But take him aside in the locker room somewhere. Sit down with him. Just have a conversation. I'm sure he'll understand. He has friends, right? He's got Roddy. He's got Kyle O'Reilly. Okay, he's got Britt. Well, maybe not Britt, but he's got people in the company. Sit down with him and have a conversation. If you're going to do it, at least how to properly apply it, right? Now, I know, look, wrestling's a cosmetic business. You want to be on television. You don't want to look pale as a ghost, right? You want to make yourself look your best. I get it, right? All the wrestlers do it. The problem is, Adam Cole, he walks out there and he looks jaundiced, and I'm very concerned for him. I see him on TV and it makes me think his liver is malfunctioning. Not only that, there was a screen cap floating around that you may or may not have seen, and it was from his match with Malakai Black a couple of weeks ago, where he was laying on the mat. I guess he had pulled his knee pad down because, you know, he does that before he goes to hit the boom. And so the knee pad was down, and so he's caked in a layer of orange, but then his knee is pasty white, which means that he put the Tanner on, I guess, after he put his knee pads on, which is kind of weird. I don't know if that's a thing that they do, but if you're going to pull your knee pad down during the match, you might want to apply it to your knee, let it dry, and then put the knee pad over it. Just a suggestion. But my God, I mean, he is glowing when he is out there in the ring. Like, it's distracting. Somebody's got to step in and do something about this. But he wanted to tell us a story. He said that MJF succeeded in doing everything in his power to keep him from getting him in the ring at full gear. One person who was successful, though, was Roderick Strong, who's going to kick MJF's ass this Saturday. Kyle O'Reilly makes his way to the ring. I made the comment in the review last week when Kyle came out and he walked away from them, right? After the match. Walked away. And I said, I can't bring myself to care about this, right? These men have been interconnected in some way. They've feuded. They've been on the same side now for years and years and years, right? Long before their time here in AEW. And for a period of time, it was over. You know, the Undisputed Era, they were over there for a while when they were in NXT together. But that was a long time ago. And I am long past the point of caring about this. So it was going to take a really strong promo here to convince me otherwise, that I should be excited and invested in this in some way, shape, or form. Kyle O'Reilly, not known to be a riveting promo, but I said, okay, let's see what he has to say. Let's see where this story is going to go. We talk about stories, right? We need more stories told on AEW television. Of course, they've always told stories. It just wasn't always the stories people wanted to hear or see. For me, this is one of those stories. Kyle comes out and he talks about how 14 years ago, right here in Reading, Pennsylvania, shout out to Reading, Pennsylvania, by the way. I used to take family trips there. I don't know if it's still there, but we used to visit the Bachmann Pretzel Factory. That was many, many years ago, back in the 90s. I don't know if it's still there, but I used to love going there. They had the yellow bags, the Bachmann rods. I don't know what else there is to do in Reading, Pennsylvania. Probably not much else other than the Pretzel Factory, but Shout out to Reading, Pennsylvania. Both of them had their second professional wrestling match against each other 14 years ago. Being associated with Adam Cole throughout his career has had serious highs and some very serious lows. But he's the only one who can tell him the truth, which is that his obsession with MJF needs to stop. Friends are willing to take bullets for him, himself included, but he doesn't have a good feeling about things. Roderick Strong could get hurt against MJF. Kyle asks, what makes Cole think MJF is not three steps ahead of him? So Cole needs to realize why so many are willing to go to war for him. It's because he's a leader. Talking about Cole now, he's a leader and he's a friend who doesn't want to see his other friends get hurt. At least that's what he hopes. MJF is more of an evil bastard than Cole will ever be, and that's a good thing. And with that, Kyle left. He turned around, he left the ring, and he left Adam Cole in the ring by himself to ponder what he just heard. I just wrote one line here. That's the only thing I wrote down about this segment. This segment felt like a funeral. People didn't care. You can gauge a lot from how engaged or not engaged the audience is. And it's interesting. You know, sometimes there are things that the crowd will pop huge for, and I'm sitting here going, I don't get it, but okay, they're into it. And then there are times where the crowd is sitting on their hands, and I'm sitting here thinking, man, this crowd sucks, right? That was great. How come they're so quiet? But here, we're on the same page. I didn't care about this. People in the building didn't care about this. They didn't seem to give a shit last week either. I don't know where this is going. It's this whole family affair with these guys. Doesn't faze me in the least. Maybe I'm in the minority on that, but that's fine. I'll own that. I don't care about this. And again, the only reason that MJF and Adam Cole are not wrestling this weekend is because they want MJF back on television. And they should. They should hold off on it until they can get him back on TV. You can get them in the ring face to face, and they can hash out their history together. They can cut promos on each other and insult each other and really give us a reason to get excited to want to see these two back in the ring again. They had something very special last year, and it sucks that they both got hurt. Cole's injury was horrible, and it came at the absolute worst possible time for him, especially because he was in the midst of the biggest push of his life. And so the timing of it was awful, and it's very hard to, you know, catch lightning in a bottle twice, which is maybe what they're trying to do here. I don't know if they're going to be successful or not. It's not 2023 anymore, but we're going to get the match, again, probably at World's End, at least get MJF back on television, in the ring, in front of an actual live crowd, where he thrives, and give that match a proper build-up. Orange Cassidy was backstage. And he said that he is going to make an example out of Wheeler Yuta in the main event tonight. Yes, this was the main event of the show. And then he's going to do the same, he said to Jon Moxley on Saturday. But he wants to do it alone. He doesn't want anybody's help. The conglomeration then walks in, right? They're his buddies, and said, it's not 5-on-1, okay? We got your back. And Cassidy got serious. For maybe the first time in his career, he shouted. He yelled at them. And he screamed that they don't have to believe him, but promise that you will stay away. Cassidy told Moxley to go ahead, do what you want to tonight. Come full gear, you're going to need all the help you can get. We had Chris Statlander one-on-one against Hikaru Shida. Wait, we have an update here from Kyle. Kyle says, according to Google, I believe it is still open. Not right now, but there are a working hour. Okay, so you're talking about the Bachman Factory? That's very cool. It's been a very long time since I've been there, so I wasn't sure if they had closed up shop. Maybe they moved to a different city or a different state. I'm not planning on going back and visiting, but I did enjoy my time there. Again, I just don't remember there being much else to do. So maybe that's the big claim to fame there in the city of Reading. I don't know. Shout out to all my fans in Reading. I mean no disrespect. Chris Statlander against Hikaru Shida. Shida fought out of a Wednesday Night Fever attempt through a series of forearms, which Statlander no-sold. And then Shida stalled when she went for the katana knee. And on commentary, Excalibur suggested that she had confidence issues after her loss to Mercedes Moné. Shida lost to Mercedes 2.5 months ago. And I checked. In the time since she lost to Mercedes Moné, Hikaru Shida has had 3 matches on Rampage. So it's not like she hasn't worked the match since then, right? She's wrestled numerous times on television since the match with Mercedes. So I will put this question to those of you who watch Rampage, if any of you are here, and ask you the question. At any point during any of those matches that she had on Rampage, did the announcers mention, or did they play it up, you know, at some point during her match where she was hesitant in any way? Did the announcers play up the fact that she might be having confidence issues in using the katana strike? Or is this just something that Excalibur, you know, they had him pull it out of his ass? My money is on him just pulling it out of his ass, but feel free to correct me if this has been a recurring story on commentary over the last few weeks. So she did connect on a Falcon Arrow for a near fall. Then she followed with a release German. Shida wanted the katana, but Statlander countered into Wednesday Night Fever, dropped her on her head, and pinned her. No surprise there, because Statlander is the one challenging this weekend for the TBS Championship. Hikaru Shida is not even on the show. So why would she win this match? She was not going to win this match. Statlander helped Shida up, shook her hand. Then Mercedes Moné walks out on stage, right? We hear the music, CEO, CEO. And she walks out on stage and she has Camille with her. And Camille still has her arm in a sling, just like she did last week. She walked out with Camille the Klutz, which is what I'm going to call her from now on. That's going to be her new name here from this point forward. Now imagine when she debuted on this show 3 months ago, right? Maybe 4 months, however long it's been. It hasn't been much longer than 3 months. Imagine thinking back to when she debuted on the show in the role that they debuted her in as the heater, as the bodyguard, right, for Mercedes. And she stands there and she's got her arms crossed and she looks intimidating. That I would be sitting here 3 months later mocking her and calling her a klutz. It's almost like their version of the Shockmaster, where the Shockmaster was supposed to be a serious gimmick. He was going to make this spectacular entrance, and he did. Oh, he did. It was quite the spectacular entrance. It was also the end of his career. And so what they did was they pivoted, and they turned him into a comedy character. He became a klutz, right? Oh, Uncle Fred became a klutz. That's basically what they've done to Camille. They have shockmastered her to where now when she's on the show, she is thoroughly embarrassed and humiliated by Mercedes every single week. This segment here was no different. They got into the ring. Mercedes basically told Camille to go after them. But of course, not before, as she was first making her way down to the ring, she got the cheap heat by going after the sports teams and she insulted the 76ers and she put over the Boston Celtics. And so that got her some cheap heat. But even though Camille had the bum wing, she said, attack. And so Camille gets into the ring and she gets in between these two women and they both proceed to kick her ass. And they dump her out of the ring. Shida goes out to the floor with her. Meanwhile, Mercedes tries to sneak attack Statlander with a backstabber. Statlander holds onto the ropes, though, and she doesn't budge. And then ultimately, she maneuvered Mercedes into position for the Wednesday Night Fever, planted her right on her head, and stood tall with the TBS title. They continue to humiliate Camille every single week. And if the idea is to get sympathy on her for the eventual split, which clearly they're teasing every single week. I don't know when they're going to pull the trigger on it, but they're teasing that eventually Camille is going to have, you know, she's going to reach her breaking point. Like Virgil with the $1 million man. Only that, of course, was built up over a period of about 3 fucking years. Maybe 4. Then we got that great payoff. I still remember that moment to this day. When Virgil waffled the $1 million man with the title, Everybody went nuts. This guy was a heel for 4 years. But it's such an easy story to tell, right? He was used and abused. He was basically like a giant manservant to this man. And every man has his breaking point. And when he waffled DiBiase, the place went nuts. And not for nothing, but Virgil got a nice little run for himself there in 91. Now, had they put Mercedes and Camille together for at least a year, they would have established a relationship between the two. Then it finally starts to break down. And then you can go from there and you can build a very similar story where she starts to disrespect Camille, right? You work for me. Carry my bags. Do this, do that, right? And then one day Camille has had enough. She attacks Mercedes and the people now are invested. They're behind Camille. You could have Camille be the one to beat her for the TBS championship. I laid all of this shit out when Camille, even before she debuted, it was just an idea. But I said, man, if they just play this thing out right, not only is it a good spot for her to be in, but you can actually play it out, play the long game here. You can build Camille up to a point where she could be the one. You can make a new star with her. She could be the next TBS champion. They have completely fucked it all up. It took 3 months, for them to completely fuck this thing up. It's very impressive. I didn't think it was possible. This is such a simple thing. But here we are. So even if that's the goal here, get sympathy on Camille, and then when she attacks Mercedes, everybody's going to be behind her. No, everybody is not going to be behind her. It's not going to mean a damn thing. Camille is cooked. She's done. That's it. It's over. You have turned her into a cartoon character. Very hard to overcome that. And with some focus creative, maybe in some places it might be possible, but not here. Because we know it's not going to be focused. We know they're not going to invest the right time and energy into correcting this that they need to. Didn't have to be this way, but here we are. Camille is cooked, and it's like I said before, just think, this woman had an NXT contract in her hand. All she had to do was sign it. And she said, no, I'm not interested. She chose poorly. I have secondhand embarrassment when I see this woman now on television. And I'm sorry to say also again about Mercedes, because I am a fan of hers and her work. And I don't know what's going on here. I really don't. I think everybody involved here bears responsibility for this. I can't just lay this at the feet of Tony Khan or at the feet of Mercedes. It's a team effort here. This is not working. Every time she comes out on television, it is consistently one of the worst segments on the entire show. It has become a competition now between her segments and Chris Jericho's segments. Which segment is going to be the worst segment of the night? Fucking awful. It's like a competition, like a race between them. A race to the bottom. MVP was backstage. And he was furious, and he whispered to the cameraman, come follow us. Him and Shelton Benjamin, they thought they found Swerve, because Swerve had that big, like, fur coat that he was wearing, and they saw somebody wearing the same jacket in the back, so they assumed it must be him. So they grabbed him, and it turned out to be somebody else, and MVP hit him in the ribs anyway with his pimp cane, and down he went. So up next, we have the handicap match. Bobby Lashley making his in-ring AEW debut. Not at Full Gear. We got it tonight. We got his in-ring debut tonight. It was a handicap match against Joe Keys and Cheeseburger. So this is going to be a trivia note now one day. When you think back and you say, who did Bobby Lashley wrestle in his first match in AEW? You can say Cheeseburger. Good old Cheeseburger. Man, Cheeseburger's been around for a while. Cheeseburger from the Ring of Honor days, man. He's still out there doing his thing. The thing about Cheeseburger, though, he was one of the more over personalities on the entire show. I don't know what that says about the show. It's not good. But he was one of the more over people on the entire program. If there's one thing Bobby Lashley hates, though, it's cheeseburgers. I mean, just look at the guy, right? He doesn't look like he's ever eaten a cheeseburger in his life. So he made short work of these two. He caught Keys, Joe Keys, charging in, dropped both men with a flatliner DDT combo at the same time. Keys got dispatched to the floor. He mowed down Cheeseburger. The Dominator connected. Lashley had the match won. Keys, though, broke up the count. Lashley flattened him with a spine buster and a spear. He got the Hurt Lock applied, and I believe Excalibur referred to it by that name, interestingly. He got the Hurt Lock applied, and Keys went out for the ref stoppage. After the match, Swerve Strickland's music hits. Prince Nana comes through one of the tunnels, and he's wielding a chair. Shelton Benjamin exits the ring to go out after him. He chases Nana to the back, but it was all a diversion, because Swerve, as it turned out, was hiding underneath the ring. So he emerged, he had the chain, he got into the ring, and he attacked Lashley with it, and then he dropped MVP and Benjamin when he came back to the ring. And he hit the house call kick and the Swerve stomp on Lashley. Strickland bailed just as Benjamin and MVP recovered, and he left through the crowd. As compared to most of the shit that we got on the show tonight, honestly, this and what we had in the opening match was probably the best. This was as good as it got. Pretty basic angle here. If you're wondering why would they put Lashley out there and not wait until the pay-per-view, I think Lashley's going to win. I mean, it's stupid to beat him. He just debuted. He's going to beat Swerve at Full Gear. Look at what they did here, right? The only reason they did this match was to set up the post-match angle. Swerve already punched him in the face once with the chain. It's not like he was coming out to get revenge for that. He came out just to do it again. So tonight it was all Swerve, which tells you that going into Full Gear, Lashley is going to get that win. And then they could run it back again at World's End. They could do a second match if they want to, maybe with a stip. But that's the only reason why they wanted Lashley in the ring tonight. They needed a reason to get Swerve out there to do what they did in the post-match angle. Renee was backstage with Mariah May and Mina Shirakawa. Two of them are going to have a championship champagne celebration this Saturday at Full Gear. First, though, they're going to be teaming up on Rampage. And Mariah said no champion deserves a celebration more than her. She takes shits and... I should just stop the sentence there. You know, when I was growing up, I like to imagine that girls don't do that. I don't know where it all goes. But girls don't do that. But she says that she takes shits and makes them shine anytime, anywhere. You hold the AEW women's title or you die. Mina said that she'll give Mariah the celebration she deserves because everybody wanted Mina back. And the two of them started dancing to end the segment. So there really wasn't a whole lot to this. But any opportunity we have to see Mariah and Mina together on TV is okay with me. It was brief, but... at least they got them on the show. Let's talk about Toni Storm. Toni Storm retired today. I should probably mention this. Toni Storm broke the news to SB Nation that after losing her AEW Women's World Championship to Mariah May at All In, and then she lost in New Japan, and then she lost in CMLL, she's on quite the losing streak. She told SB Nation that there is nothing left for her in the sport. And she apologized to her fans for being such a failure and added that they will not be seeing her in AEW, they will not be seeing her in New Japan, they will not be seeing her in CMLL or anywhere else in wrestling. She says, I'm not used to being a loser. I failed at everything. I lost in all these different places. This is the last that you will hear from me again. Enjoy Mariah May as your champion. You can all enjoy that. And she claimed that she has not spoken to Tony Khan about her decision to hang up the boots. This is where she broke the news here in this interview. And then my favorite part of this, she said, AEW is just fine without me. Everything is going well for AEW. They don't need Toni Storm. What does that remind you of? That reminds you of an interview that Kenny Omega gave to Fightful the other day where he said, everything's fine in AEW. There's nothing wrong in AEW. It was almost like she was mocking Kenny in the interview. I don't think she was, but that's the first thing I thought of. I said, wait a minute, I've heard this before. I just heard this the other day. It was bullshit then, and it's bullshit now. And I, by the way,
Somebody ought to send a telegram to Kenny Omega, or however he gets his messages these days. Maybe, I don't know, smoke signal or some kind of, I don't know. But communicate to him if he wants to go out there the next time and say, there's nothing wrong with AEW. Let it be known that he does not watch the show. Because there's no way that he or Tony or anybody else, Tony Storm, can watch this show tonight and think that everything is going well with AEW. So if you didn't know, now you know. But yes, Tony Storm has retired from the wrestling business. Of course, she has. But this is the story that they are doing. She's down in the dumps. She's down on her luck. She's lost all hope. She has reached rock bottom, and she's just giving up. She's had enough. Now, I figured this segment they're doing with Mariah and Mina on Saturday was surely going to lead to the return of Tony Storm, but if she's coming out now on Wednesday and saying, I have retired from pro wrestling, do you really want her to show up 3 days later and unretire from pro wrestling? Because this feels to me now like something that they could drag out for a little bit. So you could have Mariah turning on Mina on Saturday. And then you could go ahead and do your match with Mariah and Mina. Maybe even do a couple of matches with them in the interim. When that runs its course, then you can bring back Tony Storm. Because don't forget, they have a big show coming up in February. They're going to be in Australia for the very first time for Grand Slam. It's a big stadium show. I don't know what they're sectioning it off for. If it's going to be 50,000, 30,000, there's going to be a lot of people there. They're going to try to get a lot of people in the building. Tony Storm, right? She grew up in the Gold Coast of Australia. She started training in Australia at 13 years old to become a professional wrestler. That's going to be a homecoming for her. It would make sense for her to have a big match on that show. Let her stay out for a while. Let her sell the fact that she's retired. And after Tony and, or after Mariah and Mina do their thing and that runs its course, then you bring back Tony Storm. And you build to a rematch with her and Mariah May at Grand Slam in February. There you go. Boom. See, I'm one of the Costco guys now. Boom. There you go. It's a very simple plan. So I thought we would get Tony on Saturday. Now I'm not so sure. Now I think you can afford to keep her out. But then again, long-term storytelling with this company is not always on the menu. Sometimes it is, right? The Tony Storm Mariah May story was a story they told over a period of about 9 or 10 months, and it was great. One of the best stories they've ever told in this company. With any hope, maybe they have a little bit of input into their creative, and they can play it out and drag it out a little bit longer. No need to give it all away at once. We had Darby Allin one-on-one with Claudio Castagnoli. Darby tried a coffin drop off the top. Claudio caught him, flung him into the barricade. This was the story of the match. It's the story of every Darby Allin match. He gets abused for about 95% of the match and either makes a comeback and wins, or in this case, tries to make a comeback and fails and gets beat. It's pretty much one or the other. That's the Darby Allin formula. The guy is a human crash test dummy. And Claudio is a fucking beast. He is deceptively strong. So you put him in the ring with Darby, and that's what he's going to do. He's going to fling this man around. He's going to toss him around, and Darby's going to take these spectacular bumps. And that's exactly what we got here. Claudio, at one point, he walked up the ring steps with Darby held up in the air in a vertical suplex position and then dumped him in the ring. So it was all Claudio during the break, and he launched Darby to the floor violently, and then he did the same thing into the barricade. Darby got gorilla pressed back into the ring, made a little bit of a comeback at this point. He wanted a coffin drop. Claudio crotched him, hit an avalanche gut wrench suplex for a two count only. So he sent Darby back outside, and Claudio hit a giant swing into the steel steps. And then he flung Darby over the announce desk. So now Claudio clears off the table. Climbs on top of the table with Darby. He gorilla presses Darby Allin on top of the table, high above his head, and he proceeds to launch Darby over onto another table in the timekeeper's area, which did not break. But he took a hell of a bump. I mean, you could hear the thud. He bounced off the table. He ended up rolling onto the floor. Claudio ordered referee Paul Turner to lay down the count. Eventually, Darby was able to crawl. He barely made it back to the ring before the 10 count. And then Claudio finished him off with a running lariat off the ropes, and then he pinned Darby. Like I said, your typical Darby Allin match where he just gets the shit kicked out of him. It was a nice win for Claudio, who's become more of a tag team wrestler of late. Obviously, he's also one third of the Trios champions, but he doesn't get a lot of big singles wins. And Darby is still one of the bigger names on that roster. I mean, he's never been the champion before, and one day he will be. But for him to go in there and beat Darby, I think that was a good win. That was a much-needed win for Claudio. Makes him look like a killer. I mean, look, if the goal here is to make everybody in the Death Rider faction out to be a monster or someone who's dangerous, I will never see Wheeler Yuta as dangerous or as a monster, okay? That's never going to work. It's not. It's like he's the annoying little brother that's just tagging along with all the other ones, and he's trying to mimic what his brothers, his older brothers, are doing. That's Wheeler Yuta. I will never be able to take him seriously as somebody who is supposed to be a killer or someone who's supposed to be really intimidating. It just doesn't work. But for Claudio, he fits the bill. Again, he's strong as an ox. He goes out there. He's throwing this guy around. So they played it exactly the way that they should have. But the thing is, Darby took a hell of a bump when he got gorilla pressed onto that table. And they did replay it during the match. Then the match ended, and I went back and I counted. I counted it out. 15 seconds. That was it. 15 seconds, on to the next. It was right into the next segment. It wasn't even like, all right, checking up on Darby in the ring. Let's show another couple of replays of this insane bump that this guy took. I mean, this is the main story in the company. The Death Rider stuff is the top angle in the company. It's like their bloodline. And it took 15 seconds, and then boom, it's to the back for a private party promo. Nothing has any time to sink in on this show. Even the key angle, nothing has any time to sink in. One of the other problems, consistently, every single week, this is a problem on this show. I know the AEW diehards don't see it as a problem, but it is. I'm telling you it is. It goes a long way when you do something like this and you just take that little bit of extra time where you cut back to the announcers. Because everything, it was just pure chaos at ringside, right? Their table got all messed up and everything. Like, it's not hard. It's not hard. And I promise you, you can find a little bit of time to shave off this or that to put more shine and put more time on this, because this is the more important story in the company. But you would never know it. It doesn't feel that way. Because they don't portray it that way, because it's on to the next. And the next was in the back with Renee, who was with the tag team champions private party, asking them about their four-way title match at Full Gear. Zay and Quinn said the odds are stacked against them, but they've always been that way. Even against the Young Bucks, the odds were stacked against them. Then the Costco guys showed up. Big Boom AJ, Big Justice walked in. They did what I assume is their usual shtick. I don't watch the Costco guys, but there were a lot of booms. Boom, boom, okay? Explosions everywhere. That's their shtick. They also said that they would have an announcement coming up next. Oh, boy! I can't wait to find out what it is. But before that, we cut to MJF. Another pre-taped segment. He was not there live. He did tell us a long time ago, because you're not going to see me until Full Gear, and he certainly lived up to his word. But it was a segment where MJF is in his car. He drives up outside, like on the side of this rundown building. I don't know if it was in a trailer park or where he was. He's in the middle of nowhere. And he gets out of the car. There's a homeless guy sitting over there, begging for change. And he throws change over there, basically telling him go fetch. And so the guy goes off to take the money. And MJF, he leans up against the car and he proceeds to cut a promo on Roderick Strong. And he talks about Roderick Strong's alcoholic parents and his mother shooting his father right in front of him and how traumatizing this must have felt for him. And I had forgotten about all this. This is something they brought up a long time ago in a segment on the show. It was back when Roddy had the neck brace It was some kind of pre-tape, and he did talk about his parents. They did cover this history before. You know, it's easy to forget. There's so much shit that they throw at you on these shows. But it's a legit story where apparently his mother shot his father. He says trauma is an overwhelming sense of powerlessness, while healing is a sense of power and supported, or powered and supported. That's why Roddy does anything for Adam Cole, because he makes him feel all the things that he lacks. Just like he did to MJF, Cole was a mirage, a fraud, a liar. But he feels deep down inside, Cole really cares about Roderick Strong. He's actually happy that Roddy won this little challenge, because he's going to force Adam Cole to watch him suffer. Strong's white trash upbringing is where MJF will send him, right back where he belongs, to the trailer park. And after MJF is done with him, Roddy will wish that his mother did not shoot his father, but shot him instead. Another heartwarming message here from MJF. Renee was backstage, back with the Costco guys. We have a big announcement. Big Boom AJ and Big Justice, they said that in AJ's match with QT Marshall on Saturday, this is a match 20 years in the making. For those who don't know, Big Boom AJ used to wrestle independently. I don't think he's wrestled since. It's been 20 years since he's wrestled a match. So this is a big deal for him. And AJ did his double chunk chocolate cookie thing that he does. Again, I don't know. I don't give a shit. I don't care. But he did his spiel. And then they said, the boom. And then Big Justice said, there's only one guy. This is the announcement. The announcement is that there's one guy that they want ringing the bell at the end of that match on the pre-show on Saturday, and that is the Rizzler. For those who don't know, the Rizzler is a 7-year-old, 8-year-old kid. I don't know if he's, I guess technically he's part of the Costco guys, right? Is he part of that kind of universe? I don't think he's related to them. I think he's got his own content thing going on, his own channel. But I guess his thing is he shows up and he eats a lot of food, which is clear to me. He eats a lot of food, and then he thinks he's the Rock. Like his thing is that he does like the eyebrow, or he does this like that. That's his thing, I guess. Again, this is what I'm told. Apparently, that's what he's popular for. And he probably has a million followers on TikTok. But the Rizzler will be there. Enjoy. This is not for me. I'm not the audience for this. It's on the pre-show, so it's not a huge deal. If it brings them new viewers, I wish that it would bring them new viewers at a time when those viewers would have a product that was worth watching. I can't imagine that people who are not wrestling fans or who are not AEW fans, or maybe they only know WWE, are going to tune in to AEW and are going to be able to stick with the product. As cold as the product is right now, I wish it wasn't. So that if they actually had people tuning in for this, maybe they would stick around. Shows like the one we had tonight, not only are those people not going to stick around, they'll be lucky if their existing fans stick around, if we get more shows like this. Today's episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. I have to take a moment here at the top to shout out a member of my family, my Aunt Barbara. She has sent over some vegetable soup. It has been a godsend. It is one of the only things I can eat right now. But every November, when Thanksgiving rolls around, her food is just off the charts. Everybody loves her food. This month is all about gratitude. And along with my aunt, there's someone else that we don't get to thank enough. Ourselves. It's sometimes hard to remind ourselves that we're trying our best to make sense of everything, and in a very uncertain world, trust me, that is not easy. So here is a reminder to send some thanks to the people in your life, including yourself. Therapy can help improve your life in lots of different ways, whether it's helping you discover something about yourself you didn't know about already, or how to cope with some kind of stress in your life that's bringing you down, or even something more serious than that. Therapy can teach you new ways to cope with or overcome the things that may be holding you back from being the best version of yourself. If you're thinking of starting therapy, why not give BetterHelp a try? It's online-based and designed to fit into your schedule no matter how busy you may be. That's what makes it so convenient. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and you can switch therapists at any time for any reason, at no additional cost. Let the gratitude flow with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/Solomonster today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Solomonster. Tony Schiavone welcomed Roderick Strong and the Kingdom out on stage to absolute crickets. Strong said that he hasn't slept a wink since last Wednesday. He should have been watching this show tonight. He would have slept like a baby. He feels like a kid on Christmas that he finally gets his hands on Max. Is Strong supposed to be ashamed of his childhood and his parents? Max made him feel like he was in elementary school again. If you want to break the cycle, you have to earn it, which he's done since he was a little kid, while Max has been spoon-fed everything in his life. When things don't go MJF's way, he throws a tantrum until he gets it. Strong wants MJF to look in the mirror and realize that at Full Gear, he will pay for all of those sins with every chop, every punch, every elbow, every backbreaker. Strong will sleep well knowing he broke MJF's back and he made MJF humble. Well, that's not very PG. What more can you do here? Again, MJF sends in these tape promos, and that's fine. It's better than nothing, but he's not around. He's not around, and this is not the match that people wanted to see, but it's the match they're getting. This promo was nothing special. There's been absolutely nothing special about the journey that we have taken to this match. At least the match itself should be very good. Adam Cole, I'm sure, will be there. I'm sure he'll be involved in some way. They aired footage. Oh, boy, here we go. We got to talk about this segment. They aired footage from Collision on Saturday of Jack Perry attacking Daddy Magic, who was on commentary during Daniel Garcia's match with Johnny TV. For those who may not be aware of this, John Morrison is in AEW. He is still there. They do occasionally dust him off, and they put him on TV on one of the lesser shows. So he was there wrestling Daniel Garcia. And, of course, Daniel Garcia, Matt Menard, they have this, it's almost like an uncle and nephew type relationship, you know, a mentor and a protege. So he's out there doing commentary. Jack Perry attacks Matt Menard from behind. And Daniel Garcia did not realize this until the match was over, and they ended up in the parking lot. It looked like Jack Perry was going to kill Daddy Magic. Daniel Garcia showed up. They ended up strapping Jack Perry to the front of his scapegoat bus. And we got like a first-person camera view of them driving this man as he's tied to the bus. And they're driving through a barricade, and it looks like they're going to kill this little fucker. So now they come back live, and Menard pitches it to some footage. We have more footage of what happened that you did not see from Collision on Saturday. We see Jack Perry is tied to a chair. He's sitting in a warehouse somewhere. Garcia dumps a bucket of water on him to wake him up. And Perry said he thought that Garcia was just like him. Garcia says, "All I want to do is wrestle. That's it. All I want to do is wrestle, but we got savages around here who want to attack Matt Menard and try to hurt Matt Menard." So Perry brought up everyone having to make sacrifices. And Garcia promises that, "I'm never going to go where you want me to go. I'm not going to be the person you want me to be." Perry spits in his face and he starts laughing. Now, if somebody spat in your face, would you just stand there and look at them and smile? Like, normal human reaction. Like, what would you do if in a situation like that, somebody is staring at you and they're insulting you, they spit in your face, and you have them tied to a chair? You can do anything you want to this person, right? They're defenseless. They can't fight back. No. Daniel Garcia stands there, and he goes, "Give me a minute. I'll be right back." And he goes over by the bus, and he retrieves a crowbar. And he walks back over to Jack Perry, and they want you to think that he's going to smash this guy with the crowbar. Instead, he turns back around. He goes over to the bus. He starts smashing one of the headlights. He starts denting the hood of the bus with the crowbar. Didn't look like he did too much damage. And Jack Perry is sitting in this chair. He's defenseless, right? He's tied to the chair. He's laughing. And he's just asking, is that it? Is that it? Yes. Yes, it was. Because at the end of all of this, all Daniel Garcia did was storm off. He left the barn or the warehouse, whatever the hell they were in. Matt Menard, who's filming this, is like yelling for him. He has to go running after him. And that is how the segment ends. So I guess we're supposed to maybe believe that Jack Perry is still tied to a chair somewhere in a warehouse. We don't know where he is. He's the TNT champion. Is he going to make it to Full Gear on Saturday? Is he still sitting in that warehouse? Has he died of starvation? Does anybody know where this man is? I don't know. The announcers didn't seem too concerned about it because it was on to the next, right? We ain't got no time to grieve. It's time to move on. We got more important things to deal with. We got bigger fish to fry here on this show. So I don't know what the deal is with Jack Perry, but what a fucking geek Daniel Garcia looked like here. He gets spit on. He grabs a crowbar. Instead of busting this guy's kneecap, like I can even understand he doesn't want to like hurt him too badly because then he won't get his title match. But like of all the things you could do, he takes the crowbar, he puts a little dent in the fucking bus, and he leaves. And Jack Perry is like, that's it? That's all you got? He looked like a complete idiot. And what a weird fucking way to promote this TNT title match on Saturday. Again, I ask you, this should be the question that you ask. I don't care what promotion it is. When you have a go-home show, as they call them, this is the final Dynamite. I assume there's no Collision on Saturday because there's a pay-per-view. Now, there's Rampage on Friday, but I mean, give me a break. So the final show here before Full Gear. Did what they did here get you excited to see Jack Perry wrestle for the TNT Championship and defend his title against Daniel Garcia on Saturday? I'll answer that question. The answer is no. But you could find a lot of examples of that here on the show. This was just weird. The way they portrayed this was just very strange. But they think this is good television. I don't understand. Like it's a situation where the creative is so self-defeating for so many people on this show. It's not just that it's bad in some cases, or it's just not interesting. I mentioned Camille, right? Or Daniel Garcia in this segment. Camille, every single week. You can find different examples where it's self-sabotage. It's like they're intentionally sabotaging the performers and handicapping them and making it harder for them to do their job and get over. These people are trying. They're doing what they're told. They're doing their job and they're trying to get over and do their thing in spite of the creative that they're given. It's horrible. It doesn't help them. Chris Jericho. We go right from this to a Jericho segment. I thought this was just a cruel joke on me. As I'm watching this show, Chris Jericho is the Ring of Honor world champion, okay? This man is the Nueve. And he's going to have a contract signing tonight with Tomohiro Ishii because they're going to have a ROH title match, not on the pay-per-view, thank God. They're going to do it on Dynamite next week. This will be our Thanksgiving Eve present. So they're doing it next week. Renee is in the back in a room. Jericho sitting to her right. Ishii is sitting to her left, and there's a contract. Jericho refuses to sign the contract before his legal team has a chance to review it, which is smart, by the way. Don't sign a contract until your lawyer has a chance to look it over. That's sage advice here. So Jericho takes the contract, and he leaves. And the camera follows him into the hallway, and down the hallway there's a giant poster or billboard on the wall for a Collision. And one of the faces, the big blown-up faces on there, is Chris Jericho. And he stops to admire himself. Right? Look at this guy. Meanwhile, behind Jericho, we see that Ishii has also exited. And now he's stalking Jericho. I would say there's maybe, I don't know, 10 feet between them. And Jericho turns around and he sees him. And now he's spooked. Right? Now the smile is gone. And Jericho starts to walk. And as he's walking, Ishii is following behind Jericho. And Jericho's grabbing a garbage can and putting it in the way, and Ishii knocks it aside. And Jericho says to these guys, oh, hey, yeah, this guy wants to talk to you. And he puts the people in front of them, and Ishii shoves them out of the way. Like, no matter what Jericho puts in front of him, he just pushes it out of the way. So it wasn't really like he was chasing Jericho. They were walking at a brisk pace. Jericho climbs up some stairs. Ishii climbs up some stairs. Jericho ends up on the concourse. Now he's in the crowd. And basically, Ishii follows him through the crowd all the way to the ring. Now they're in the ring. They could have started this segment in the ring to begin with. But okay. So now they're in the ring, and Jericho says, well, look, I can't sign this contract because I don't have a pen. I don't have a pen. Well, Ishii came prepared, and he pulls out a pen. So Ishii has one, hands it to Jericho. He signs the contract, and now he's stalling until Big Bill and Brian Keith show up, and they attack Ishii from behind. Dead silence from the crowd for this. Crowd does not give a single solitary shit about any of this. Now, they did laugh. You could hear them in the background when this first started, where Ishii was stalking him in the back. You could hear that they were laughing at first. But once they were actually in the ring, and then we saw, you know, him get attacked and everything, couldn't care less. So Jericho was going to stab Ishii with the pen until Mark Briscoe and Rocky Romero made the save. Ishii sent Bill to the floor. Romero flew out with a dive. Keith got dropped with a J-driller. And then Jericho got planted with a brainbuster. Ishii then signed the contract to make it official, so that match will take place on TV next week. What the fuck did I just watch? I don't know. It was a Jericho segment. It's the way I would describe it. It was a Jericho segment. I'm sure he has say in what he does in his segments. And this is what they decided to do here as far as doing a contract signing between these two, having them start in the back and work their way to the ring. Again, nobody cared. Now, the first match they had, from what I remember, because I think it was 2 years ago, that's the one where Jericho bled from the chest from all the chops. I mean, it was good, but, like, again, you know what you're going to get here in this match. It's going to be 150,000 chops. I hope they do something a little bit different than what they did in their first match, but it's just one of those things where Jericho's the Ring of Honor World Champion. I don't care. Are they going to just have Mark Briscoe beat him at Final Battle at the Hammerstein Ballroom and win the belt back? Maybe. I mentioned Samoa Joe. He's free and clear. He's done filming for this season of Twisted Metal. Last time we saw him, Jericho put him through a wall on a forklift. It would make sense when Joe comes back for him to want to get revenge on Jericho. You could have Joe beat him at the Hammerstein Ballroom. That'd be a cool moment. I don't want to see Joe relegated to Ring of Honor. But as I've mentioned, all the Ring of Honor champions, pretty much, can appear on AEW television, evidently except Athena. It's in her contract that she can't appear on AEW television, but maybe once a year. Because I think she may have been in the Owen Hart tournament. I don't remember. But she's just not allowed, apparently. Tony Khan does not want her on AEW television. Everybody else can appear. All right, we get Dustin Rhodes every now and then, Sammy Guevara every now and then, Mark Briscoe was on the show every week, Chris Jericho's on the show every week. But apparently Athena, it's a completely different story. That's why I said before, the Costco guys have more FaceTime on this show than Athena does. But hey, she's now the longest reigning champion of any kind in the history of Ring of Honor. So I don't know what that means. I don't know if that gives her a pay raise. I don't know. Good for her. She's another one being wasted away. Renee was backstage with Jamie Hayter, who looks like something out of a fucking Austin Powers movie. She said that she was baffled as to why Julia Hart's vignette interrupted her last week, because she's never spoken about her. She's never wrestled her before. She has nothing to do with her. But she says, you know, that's cool. I move to the beat of my own drum too, just like Julia does. But if she wants to have a chat. And then she got interrupted again by a brand new vignette. We cut to a package. We hear Brody King's voice saying, it's time to come home. The house is her foundation. Julia's rebirth is complete. It's time to rebuild. And they show Julia Hart. She's shooting arrows in the woods somewhere. Apparently she's taken up archery in her time off. Brody's voice says that she's the princess of the Black Throne, the keeper of secrets. She's Julia Hart, and her heart grows harder. An arrow then hits a bullseye. We see Julia screaming. They cut to black. They've done some pretty cool vignettes for her over the last few weeks. I don't know that when she comes back, she's going to look any different or her character is going to be any different. It's just a reintroduction for her. What they've done with her, though, is cool. Obviously, they're building to something with her and Jamie Hayter. It's like they're trying to just throw as many people on the undercard at Jamie as they can to stall until they get to a point where they're ready to have her challenge for the championship that she kind of got screwed out of before she got hurt. So they did her and Penelope Ford. They're going to do her and Julia Hart. You know, when they decide to do the match, I think the play for Australia is going to be Toni Storm and Mariah May. So I think we're looking at probably Revolution at the absolute earliest if we're going to have Jamie Hayter going after that championship. And I don't have an issue with them building up to it. I mean, you could even do Double or Nothing. That's still a long ways away. Do I have faith that they're going to come up with stuff that's interesting for Jamie Hayter to do over these next 6 or 7 months? I don't. So I'm kind of torn on this. On the one hand, you don't have to rush right into putting her in a world title match, but what the fuck are they going to do with this woman between now and then to try to get her going again? She was so hot with the fans before she got hurt, and it sucks that she got hurt. And it killed all of her momentum. The people still like her, but she is not over at all in the way that she used to be. She's kind of over still, but nothing like what she was before she got hurt. I really sincerely hope she can recapture some of that magic. But it has to be supported by creative, or at least having her on the show consistently, putting her in the ring with people. She was going out there having banger matches every week. She kind of reminds me of Sheamus in that respect. No matter who you put her in the ring with, there was a period of time where Jamie Hayter was going out there and having kick-ass matches on these shows. And that's what was getting her over. That's why I mentioned Sheamus. Sheamus, he's the most consistent performer in wrestling right now. You put him in the ring on TV with almost anybody, he's going to have a very good match. So at least try to get her in the ring more often. Doesn't have to be every single week, but there's no real consistency to it. So she's not going to be able to get over at that level again unless you get her back in the ring and let her do what she does best. Main event of this show, though, was Orange Cassidy against Wheeler Yuta. They fought to the floor. Yuta managed a brainbuster. Then he exposed the metal portion of the turnbuckle, and he drove Cassidy's face into it before hitting a DDT on the apron. So that took us into the final commercial break. We come back from the break. Cassidy battles back with a PK and a stiff brainbuster for a near fall. So it's brainbusters galore. Arn Anderson and Tully Blanchard would be proud. Brainbusters galore on the show tonight. The last segment, I love how the last in-ring segment we had before this ended with a brainbuster. And in the opening minutes of this match, we had two more brainbusters. I swear to God, it's like, literally, I think they just let people do whatever the fuck they want. And there's really nobody overseeing things. You would think Tony Khan would be that guy. You would think that he would look and say, yeah, you know what? We're doing a brainbuster with Ishii. That's kind of his move. We're going to end that segment with it. You know, maybe lay off that. Or if you want to do one near the end of the match, right? There's no quality control here. You literally just let them go out there and do whatever the fuck they want. So we go from one brainbuster to a second brainbuster to a third brainbuster. What does it mean? What does it mean? Nothing. Nothing. Absolutely nothing. Cassidy wanted an orange punch. Yuta countered into a snap German and an angle slam. Cassidy hit Soul Food and a Michinoku driver for a two count. Yuta dodged an orange punch and then locked in Brian Danielson's cattle mutilation. Cassidy got his feet on the ropes. Yuta stormed out to the floor, grabbed a chair, but Cassidy ducked a shot, got the quick roll up with the legs trapped for the flash pin. After the match, Pac appears. And he dropped Cassidy with a kick. Here comes Claudio. Here comes Marina Shafir. Here comes John Moxley. All out of the crowd here. And Shafir hands duct tape to Pac. I was hoping they would put it over Excalibur's mouth, but they did not do that. Claudio put Cassidy's hands in his pockets. And Pac taped his arms, and the Death Riders took turns, pie-facing Orange Cassidy around until Moxley dropped him with a series of punches and open-hand slaps. Cassidy then started, he got back to his feet, and Orange Cassidy begins to do his little weak kicks. Now, I thought that this was supposed to be a serious angle. This is the invasion, effectively, of AEW, right? This main event, on Saturday is for control of All Elite Wrestling. This faction has been running roughshod over this company, beating people up every single week, beating them up with hammers. This is supposed to be their A1 serious angle here. Orange Cassidy is supposed to be serious now. He's yelling and screaming. He's cutting promos. He's dressed in black denim. And now we have him. He's taped. He's unable to defend himself, and he brings back the little shit kicks. There's a time and a place for that. If you're going to do an angle like this, do a serious angle. You don't need to do that bullshit. You know what I mean? Like, this guy, he's taped, he's defenseless, he's getting the shit kicked out of him, and he's going to do little weak kicks. Okay, so Moxley clubs him with a forearm. Exactly what he should have done. The announcers, who have to try to sell this shit, are talking about Cassidy living and dying by his words and wanting to go it alone. And they all left Cassidy laying, and they left through the crowd, and the conglomeration now finally comes out to the ring. They free him from the tape. And Cassidy struggled to his feet, slowly put his sunglasses on, put his hands back in his pockets. Moxley looks back at the ring, realizing that what they did to him and everything that they threw at this man didn't work and didn't keep him down. And then Excalibur pushes this ridiculous narrative that whoever wins on Saturday will have control of All Elite Wrestling. Silly me, I thought that it was the man behind the curtain. Evidently, if Orange Cassidy wins, that he will be in control of All Elite Wrestling. Maybe that will make him the general manager. Maybe Tony Khan will make him an EVP. As if he didn't learn his lesson by making the other people EVPs in this company. Maybe he'll make Orange Cassidy an EVP. So Cassidy knew he was going to get his ass kicked. He came out. He took it anyway. He was trying to prove a point that he's not going to go down easy on Saturday. It's the story that they have chosen to tell with this. It's not a very good one. But that is the story that they are telling. That's your main event on Saturday. Your main event of Full Gear is Orange Cassidy challenging Jon Moxley for the World Championship. I know Orange Cassidy has been pushed pretty hard throughout his run here in this company, and the AEW audience likes him. This does not feel like a main event. It just doesn't. The two of them have had some really good matches before, so hopefully they'll have one again on Saturday. But as main events go, I'm not feeling this. There's a lot of matches on this show that have the potential to be really, really good. And the one thing that AEW is very good at is the in-ring quality on their pay-per-views. They do it better than anybody else. I will give them that. I've always said that. I'm not saying that because the build sucked that Full Gear is going to suck. Full Gear could turn out to be one of the sleeper shows of the year. But I am going into this Full Gear show, and I don't know that I have ever felt this down going into a show where I'm just like, eh. Eh. But I can tell you this, as go-home shows are concerned, what we saw tonight was the worst go-home show in the history of AEW. All the pay-per-views that they've done over the last 5 years, that last show, that last Dynamite they give you going into the pay-per-view, this was the fucking worst one that I can ever remember. And that's sad. Full Gear is usually one of their bigger shows of the year. Doesn't feel that way this year. Feels like they're punting until the next show. Now let's run down the card, and I will go through the predictions here. We'll start with the 0 hour pre-show. Right now, we only have one match announced. This is AEW, though. I'm sure they're going to add three more. Yeah, they try to get as many people on these shows as possible. There's a lot of names missing. We'll probably get some kind of 10-man tag, 12-man tag. But right now, it's just one match. And it's going to be QT Marshall, who has not wrestled a single match since returning to this company, because now he's in an executive role behind the scenes. So they're dusting him off to be in the ring here, to go one-on-one and lose to Big Boom AJ from the Costco guys, who will be there with his son, AJ Justice, and the Rizzler will be there to ring the bell when Big Boom AJ inevitably wins this match, which of course he will. We have the main card, which has Hangman Adam Page against Switchblade Jay White. White beat Hangman at WrestleDream. I expect Hangman to win here. No reason to beat him twice. They've told a very basic story with these two. Right? The leg. Hangman's been selling a leg injury. That's going to come into play here, but I do think he pulls out the win. We have Mercedes Moné defending the TBS championship against Chris Statlander. I look at the talent in the match. There's no reason to think they can't go out there and have a very good match. But boy, has the segments on television leading up to this fucking sucked. Tonight was no different. I'd like to just pretend that this never even happened, to just go in there blind on Saturday and try to enjoy the match for what it is. Mercedes has had some other matches also that have not gone well, and they've been very cold because she's not over. It's amazing to say that, considering where she came from, all the success that she had, the huge following she has on social media. She's got a lot of very loyal, diehard fans who will follow her to the ends of the earth. And many of them have, many of them have not. She does not feel like a superstar the way she did when they built that whole debut for her back in March. Big business. It was all based around her. The boss is here. The CEO is here. And the Mercedes Moné that walked into AEW back in March is not the same Mercedes that we see on TV now. She's just not. So I'd like to see her go out there, and I'd like to see her change the narrative and get the people into it. Chris Statlander and Willow Nightingale, they got the fans into their match. When they wrestled, they had that great match last time. I'd love to see these two go out there and do the same thing. But Mercedes is not losing her championship. Swerve Strickland goes one-on-one with Bobby Lashley. Bobby Lashley, first match in AEW, ended up happening tonight. This will be his first singles match and his first real match, and I don't see any reason to beat him in his first real match. This is something you can get a second match out of. You can extend this beyond full gear. You don't beat Bobby Lashley in his first match. So I got Bobby Lashley for the win. Private Party defends the AEW World Tag Team titles in a four-way match against the Outrunners, the House of Black, and the Acclaimed. I was surprised that the House of Black went over on FTR when they qualified for this match. I was disappointed when the Acclaimed beat Roosh and the Beast Mortos on Collision to earn their way into this match. Things aren't going so well for Jake Roberts, right? They just added him and LFI together as a pairing. It's not going so well. They're off to a rough start. So we got the Acclaimed in there. The Acclaimed is another one of these acts on TV that just feels ice cold to me right now. But they're going to be in there. Private Party, they've had the titles for a few weeks. They're not going to lose their titles this quickly, I don't think. So I have them retaining. We have the women's championship celebration, the champagne celebration with Mariah May and Mina Shirakawa. I thought Toni Storm was going to be making a return here. After what she said, her comments today about retiring, quote-unquote, I think that you can play that out a little bit longer, and I think, if anything, Mariah is going to smash a champagne bottle over Mina's head. And we're going to get Mina and Mariah next for the Women's Championship heading into December. Either winter is coming or World's End. MJF returns to take on Roderick Strong. This entire thing has been something. It's been something to follow. And originally it was going to be Cole and Roddy competing to see who could get to three wins first. And that person would get MJF. Then it changed, where if they both got three wins consecutively, they would both get MJF and we would get a triple threat match, which of course made no sense why MJF would agree to that, because it would be effectively a handicap match and he would get his ass kicked. Thankfully for him, Adam Cole did not win. Roderick Strong did, and so here we are. MJF is not losing to Roderick Strong. He said tonight, the goal is to hurt Roddy to get to Cole. Adam Cole will be there. He'll factor into this in some way. It's not going to matter. MJF is not going to lose to Roderick Strong. And once we get past this, we can finally begin the build in earnest. The real build between MJF and Cole heading into World's End. Daniel Garcia challenges Jack Perry for the TNT Championship. The one prediction here I'm changing is in this match. I originally had Daniel Garcia winning the TNT Championship. After that ridiculous, weird segment they did on this show, I don't think that's the case. I think Jack Perry is going to retain. I do think Daniel Garcia will end up with the TNT title, but they're going to hold off until next month. So that's the one prediction I'm changing from that I had on Sunday. I've got Jack Perry retaining. Kyle Fletcher gets his match with Will Ospreay. I know a lot of people think you got to give the win to Kyle Fletcher. It means more for him than it would to Will Ospreay. It doesn't really hurt Will to lose to him. It doesn't, but I still say you don't beat Will Ospreay. Will Ospreay is the star here. Will Ospreay is the one who's got a lot of bigger things coming his way in 2025. I think that he could give Kyle Fletcher the best match of his life. But I still think at the end of it, Will Ospreay is going to pull out the win. And then the main event, Jon Moxley and Orange Cassidy for the AEW World title. Jon Moxley is not losing the championship to Orange Cassidy. He's not losing the championship before Darby Allin gets his shot. I can only hope they have a very good match. That's the best I could hope for. I'm not really expecting some kind of big twist or swerve or anything like that. I'm trying to think if maybe there's somebody who's been out of action, maybe, who shows up at the end. I did mention Samoa Joe's name earlier. If they don't want to use him in the ROH title picture, they could maybe plug him in here. You get Joe and Moxley, maybe could be a match where Joe tries to save AEW. I don't know. I mean, there could be a return and somebody steps up. I don't know who that would be. But the one thing I can tell you is that Jon Moxley is not losing this title in what is basically his first title defense, right? Yeah, he's not losing that championship. But this Full Gear card, man, I don't know. The potential is there for some great matches on Saturday, but this show is stone cold going into this weekend. It just does not feel like there is a big AEW pay-per-view 3 days away. Just doesn't. It's the magic isn't there. And this show, Tony Khan should be embarrassed by this show that he put on tonight. He's not going to be, but he should be. Because this was the worst fucking go-home show that I have ever seen. What did you think of Dynamite before Full Gear? A whopping 20.8% of you say thumbs up on this show. 79% thumbs down. I don't think that thumbs down is high enough. But we got over 1,400 votes in so far. Get your votes in. At Solomonster, it's the place to go. Hey, Uffman, thank you for the gifted memberships, and Justin as well, gifting some more channel memberships. I appreciate that very much. Even when we have a bad show, the one thing I could always rely on is hanging out with you guys. And that puts a smile on my face. So that's all that matters. By the way, we already smashed the goal. So, Be the Booker is guaranteed tonight. You guys earned that. We'll do Be the Booker here in a little bit. First, I want to get to your super chats. Let's talk about this. We'll see what's on your mind. Unregistered Hypercam 2. Did Camille royally piss off Tony Khan for this booking? She must have done something. Hell if I know what it is. But boy, it must have been real bad. DEH Sires, do you think Camille regrets not taking that NXT deal? Yes. Roscoe P. Coltrane with the $2.99. Roscoe, thank you. Oz and Glorious flying in with a $5 super chat here, and Oz says, "Dear Tony Khan, nobody gives a flying fuck about Roddy, Sheeta, OC, Yuta, Garcia, Daddy Magic." He's listing the entire roster here. Statlander, Mark Briscoe, or Darby right now. Change it up, please. There's no lies in what you just said, and it's not that people don't care about somebody like Chris Statlander, but again, just listen to the crowd. All you got to do is listen to the crowd. I am convinced that half of the AEW people that get really pissy when they hear me say anything negative about AEW, that they're hard of hearing. And they literally can't hear the crowds. I'm convinced of this. Matt says, what's worse, AEW now or WWE in 2016, 2019? WWE in 2019 was fucking god-awful. It was the shits. But this is pretty bad. This is pretty bad. And I know they could just be doing so much better. And I'm hoping that move into the smaller venues is going to just light a fire under them. Because I really think that's a big part of the presentation. You know, when you have a smaller, more intimate venue, but it's packed in, and you have fans that are invested in the product, and they're loud, and they're excited, I feel like it motivates the performers, and I feel like it just comes across on television, and that energy, that's the first thing they got to do, is get that energy level up. But part of the reason the energy level is down is because you're not giving the people something for them to invest in that they can like and that they're entertained by. If you did, these buildings would not be half empty. Retro KOH, it's odd that the weirdo with the painted creeper van was the one who got abducted. Role reversal. Yeah, everything about that segment just felt ass backwards. Justin G says, everything is great. Trust me, the learning tree. Thanks, guys. Yeah, everything's just great. Don't mind the fires that are burning around us here. Everything's great. Oz and Glorious, holy shit, nobody cares about Athena either, my dude. No, there are people who care. You're talking to one right now. You can't say that. See, so you're a liar. There are people who care. Unfortunately, there are people who care who stop caring. That's true. But no, there are people who care. So take a seat. Justin G says, all hail the Rinsler. It is the Rizzler, right? I said the Rinsler, it's the Rizzler. Joey Jojo Jr., the only way to save Camille, she has to squash Mercedes. Then Mercedes needs to go away for a little while. Brother, I'm not even sure her squashing Mercedes is not even going to matter at this point. I really don't think it's going to make a difference. She'll get a pop, like an initial pop for it. And then it won't mean anything. Do you trust these people? After what you have seen them do with Camille these last 3 or 4 months, do you honestly think that all of a sudden they should be trusted with how to book this woman or that they're going to do right by her? You know how many times I gave Tony Khan the benefit of the doubt when it came to Wardlow? And I ended up looking like a fucking idiot for it. Justin G says, the Shamer endorses the Rinsler. Brother Jack Dew. That's right, the Shamer. Called Seamus the Shamer by accident the other night. I love you, Solo. Says, Solo brings the boom. This show brings the doom. That's true. Jeremy Rose, this is the worst weekly wrestling show that I've ever seen. And I was around for the death days of WCW. Snowman Tony needs help ASAP. Any ideas? Nope. Luke Soap. What, beyond everything I've already said? He doesn't want to cede power. He's not going to give control of his product up to somebody else. You know, anybody thinking Scott D'Amore or this person or that person, not going to happen. This is his product. He doesn't think there's anything wrong with it. Everything's great. If you don't recognize that there are issues on the creative side, then you can't fix them. He is creative. He's the guy. The buck stops with him. If he doesn't think that there's a problem, then nothing gets fixed. So the answer is no. Until they realize there's an issue here, there's nothing that can be done. Luke Soap, put the Rizzler in Be the Booker. Also looking forward to the Full Gear review. I put the Rizzler in Be the Booker, man. It's going to result in some very interesting matches. Can you imagine the Rizzler against the Great Khali? Actually, I'm in Be the Booker. The Rizzler against Solomonster? No cap. While we're at it, Hawk Tua is all elite. In all seriousness, this show has been garbage for weeks. George freaking Sekman. You should put the gobbledygooker in Be the Booker for Thanksgiving next week. I don't think I'm going to do that. I had him in there previously. I took him out. I don't feel like putting him back in. The chances of landing on him anyway that 1 week are very, very slim. Alex with the 25 says, let the activation commence. Yes, we got some Brie mode. Is there something bigger spewing with Adam Pearce? I think you mean brewing. Is there something spewing, he says, with Adam Pearce sharing that mysterious Lesnar and Heyman photo, or is it meaningless? Much love, brother. I don't think it has much meaning since it was already gone by the time I heard about it and went to go check it out. I don't think it's up anymore. So I wouldn't read too much into that. El Masse with a 23. On July 2003, the mayor of Knox County, Tennessee, hit a tombstone pile driver on the future Secretary of Education on Monday Night Ball. Yeah, did you see the new Raw logo? We now have SmackSown with that new logo on Fridays, and we have Monday Night Ball coming to Netflix in January. Who is working on these logos? S. McPhee 101, Solo, do not be so quick to hit the buzzer on wrestlers like Rosa Mendez. There is still the devil's choice and three or four-way options. Miracles can happen. Well, that's a fair point. We do have the devil's choice is in there. That is true. House of Haz. I tuned in tonight and thought I was watching a COVID-era show. It sounded like an empty building, except Daly's Place had an enthusiastic crowd. Yeah, but brother, that's a lifetime ago. There was reason to be enthusiastic back then. They have to give you a reason to be enthusiastic. Justin G. His renewed membership for 20 months. Thanks, Solo. Thanks, Mods. Thanks to the chat. And almost always keeps it fun. Thanks, guys. Thank you. Hologram is injured, says Mikey. Yes, Hologram has been injured. That's why you haven't seen Hologram hologramming it up on TV. But I did see that there's a brand new Hologram mask that they have added to AEW Shop or Shop AEW. $50 they're charging for a Hologram mask that looks like it was, you know, built by your next door neighbor in their garage. That doesn't include shipping, by the way. Justin G says, Beast Mortos, just barely over my guy, Mantar. Jeremy Rose says, Swerve made Hurt Syndicate look like clowns. Yeah, that's because he's going to lose. They're going to get their win back on Saturday. Justin G says, Beast Mortos plus Omos equals Mortomos equals ratings. The Beast Mortos. Now I'm picturing Omos with the Beast Mortos headgear on. That's a scary sight. Retro KOH. Lashley wanted a creative angle in WWE involving a lot of cheeseburgers. Now he got his cheeseburger in AEW. Good job, Tony. That's true. Yeah, he wanted to get really fat. He wanted to gain 70 pounds and go into a deep depression after losing. And then he would be motivated to lose all the weight. That was the idea that he pitched that Vince McMahon said no to. Branded by Bryant. Sheeta has been hesitating to use her finisher since her second loss to Mercedes. Excalibur didn't pull that out of his ass. I hope not. I'll take your word for it. That's why I asked the question. It kind of came out of nowhere on Dynamite, but then I realized we don't really see Sheeta very often on Dynamite. So I said, for those of you who tune in to the three matches that she had on Rampage, did they or did they not mention it, or did she hesitate at all? So Branded by Bryant is saying that she has hesitated. So that is a story that they have told with Sheeta, which is good. I'm glad to have that consistency. Uffman says, with the Costcos on the 0 hour, I will be in the concourse waiting for the pay-per-view to begin. Yes, I will be doing something, I don't know what. I might have to check this out, though. It could be so bad it's good. Again, this I'm actually curious because this guy does have experience doing independent wrestling. It's been 20 years. So I'm curious to see what he looks like. What kind of wrestling match are they actually going to have and what he looks like. So I probably will tune into it. Hey, Tuxedo T Servo, thank you, man, for the $12. I appreciate that. George freaking Sekman. But Jericho is going to be the savior of Ring of Honor and get that big TV deal. Sarcasm fully intended. Oh, don't think that if Ring of Honor gets a TV deal, that Jericho won't take credit for it. I assure you, if Ring of Honor does end up getting a television deal, it's not because they put the belt on Chris Jericho. It's just, it's comical. Like, to even think about this, like, a bunch of television executives are sitting in a room somewhere, and they're like, eh, you know what? We're kind of on the fence about this Ring of Honor thing. I don't know. What's that? Oh, Tony Khan put the Ring of Honor World Championship on Chris Jericho. Fucking 3-year deal. $250 million. Let's go. Signed. Sign right there. What, are you out of your fucking mind? NWO Matt says, the learning tree made Jericho segment the best thing ever. Sarcasm. You're quite fond of the learning tree. I appreciate it. You're the learning tree's biggest fan. Yuri with the $10 super chat. I remember thinking years ago when people like Darius Martin and others got over and then they just disappeared off TV, that wasn't a good sign with how often it happened. Shame how cold it has gotten since. You know, there have been certain people where they kind of get hot. Sometimes there's injuries. Sometimes there's injuries and we may not be aware of it, but you can't excuse it all by injuries. You know, I mean, there are people saying, oh, well, Wardlow's been out with a knee injury. Okay, so what? That's this year. How do you explain last year? How do you explain the year before that? You can't make excuses for these people. There's no reason for some of these people to get hot and then they cool them off. Speaking of which, Juliet says, congrats on getting Ricky Starks for House of Glory. Yes, Ricky Starks is finally going to be able to do what Ricky Starks does. He's going to be able to get in the ring and wrestle. We got Ricky Starks coming in to Chicago on January 17th for HOG. We are very happy to have him coming in. So you can get your tickets right now, hogwrestling.net. I'm sure that show will be streaming as well on Triller TV Plus. Justin, thank you for gifting a membership to Dan Richards. Uffman, thank you as well for the gifted memberships. Justin says, Uffman and I bribed the chat to get 401 likes before Super Chats. Well, whatever you did, it worked, so thank you. Uffman says, Justin speaks no lies. Power spying games, would Jay White have fared better in WWE? That's a tough one. I can't say for sure. I think he would be in a better position right now. I can't say what he would be doing. I can't say he would be a champion at the moment on either brand, but do I think he would have fared better? Yes, I do. And Nier Solo says, listen to the crowd. What crowd? Fair point. Fair point, Nier. I stand corrected. You are correct. I love that. What crowd? Oh my goodness. Let's be the booker.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is now time to be the booker.
Kenny Omega, by the way, has made it official. He is going to have his first match back against Gabe Kidd. January 5th for New Japan Pro Wrestling at Wrestle Dynasty. So that is now official. You want to see Kenny Omega, got to tune into the New Japan show. See Kenny Omega's big comeback. Okay. He can use that match to work out any ring rust that he might have and get himself where he needs to be for when he's ready to come back to AEW. And according to Omega, AEW doesn't need him right now. Evidently, Kenny Omega doesn't watch the show. Because there's no way that Kenny Omega believes that. But he's a good little soldier, and he's going to say what Tony wants him to hear. He's going to say what Tony wants to hear. All right. Tag team, be the booker. We begin with the former unified tag team champions, Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn. What a payoff to that story. What a sight that was at the end of WrestleMania last year. Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn going to put those unified titles on the line against Stone Cold Steve Austin and Dude Love. Wow, what a match. We get Owens and Austin back in the ring for a second time. And it's kind of funny that we get Foley and Sami Sami Zayn is probably the closest thing in wrestling today. There's just something about him. Maybe it's the flannel that we see him wearing sometimes. But it's also just, I don't know, it's his promos and just there's something about him. He reminds me a lot of Mick Foley. Like the closest thing to, and I don't mean in terms of crazy bumps and stuff, but just in terms of his promos and that personality, Sammy is the closest thing to Mick Foley that we have in wrestling today. By the way, that's a lot of tag team titles on the line, right? You got the unified titles, and then they got the tag team titles here. That's a lot of gold. That's a great match. That's a great match. That might be our main event tonight. That's going to be hard to top. I'm almost afraid now to continue. But continue we must. Women's Be the Booker. We begin with sensational Sherri Martel. We are off to a great start here. Sherri Martel, former women's champion. Sherri was fantastic. And as great as everybody says that she is, she still, I feel, is underrated. There's still so many people out there who don't know who she is, newer fans. It's a shame. I wish more people knew the name. That's why I pitched the whole, when they had that debacle a few years ago where they named the Women's Battle Royal after the not-so-fabulous Moolah, I said, change the name. Make it the Sensational Invitational. In tribute to Sherri Martel. They didn't do it. I think that would have been great. Sherri Martel going to go one-on-one with Becky Lynch. The man. On her way back very soon. Keep your eye out. I think she's going to be back in time for that Netflix Raw. I think she's coming back sooner than some people may think. Becky Lynch and Sherri Martel. We have just booked two quality WrestleMania-esque matches here in Be the Booker. Can we complete the trifecta? Can we do it? We need a strong men's match here now. And then we're good. Maybe I should pick a stipulation first. What do you think? Before I even pick the individuals, why don't we pick a stipulation? We'll have a stipulation match here. Bring it home. I'm going to try to bring it home. What kind of match are we going to have? We're going to have, oh my God. Why? On a pole, bro. Look at Baby Russo. We have a pole match. We have a pole match in the main event. I should have left well enough alone. I know. Well, look, hey, you find the right people, you can make it work, right? You can make it work. I know. I have to stop doing that. We have to save the stips for special occasions. I know. Oh man, too. We're off to a good start too, Mr. Perfect. One of the greatest intercontinental champions of all time. Great wrestler. Now he's got to be in a pole match. Mr. Perfect should never be in a pole match. But he's in one now. Against Alberto Del Dipshit. Alberto Del Dipshit in a pole match against Mr. Perfect. We were so close to the promised land, and I ruined it. I ruined it. You blame me. I'm the one who spun, so it's my fault. It's all my fault. I have failed you. Yeah, well, I guess the stipulation didn't really matter, but that's just kind of the icing on the shit sundae there. Yuri with the $5 super chat. Actually, a pair of $5 super chats. No excuses can be made. So many tailor-made talents. He just did not make sure to go all in with Wardlow, Starks, Hobbs, etc. There's promise with Hobbs right now. Again, do I have faith in them to follow through? I don't, and it kills me because Tony Khan was somebody that at the beginning there, I would have said, you know what, I give him the benefit of the doubt. I felt the same way about Lucha Underground. I never really worried about where things were going because they always seemed to have a focus and a story, and they knew how to build characters on that show. So the writers and the people in charge, I had full faith in them. I had faith in Triple H when he was running Black and Gold. And I had that faith in Tony Khan at the beginning, and I don't have that now. I want them to get back there again where I can have that faith and I can give them the benefit of the doubt. Okay, well, you know, there was a misfire here, but you know what? Their track record is pretty good. Can't say that anymore. And if you think that you're frustrated, how do you think the talent feels? Especially the ones that are sitting on the bench right now. Yuri says, also, what the fuck are they doing having Jake the Snake and he's essentially a manager to lower card acts and jobbers? He's a manager to the luchadors. You forgot the most important part. He's a manager to the luchadors. And you would think like he could help cut promos for them because maybe their English is not the best. Yeah, theoretically, it kind of makes sense, but where are the promos? I don't see the promos. Carlos says, yeah, I don't know about this show. What did I just watch? You just watched a terrible show. That's what you watched, Carlos. The learning sicko, Dr. Bropio, you know it's all about the boom. Costco guy, baby. Costco guys are more over than Adam Cole. Retro KOH, Alberto got arrested the night before. Give Mr. Perfect a new opponent. No, we can't cheat. We can't cheat. And Justin G says, handcuffs on a pole, bro. Do it. Yeah, I don't know what was on the pole in the match. We never did figure out what was on the pole in the pole match. There has to be something hanging from the pole. Well, I guess we have Russo. We have baby Russo hanging from the pole. What happened to Ortiz from LAX? He tore his pec, and he's been out with the injury. So should be back soon. I think he hurt himself many months ago. But last I knew, he was still recovering from the injury. TK Banks, if I was a talent, I would be pissed that Tony Khan got CMLL guys coming in next week. It's Forbidden Door season all year. Yeah, we got Mystico and Hechicero and is it Atlantis? Is it Atlantis Jr.? I don't know. They got some CMLL talents coming back. Maybe one of them will be in the Continental Classic, Hechicero. Hechicero had some good matches, but again, I don't care. I'm sorry. I don't follow the product. I don't give a shit. I'm sure some people do, right? I mean, that's fine. I don't care. They have bigger problems to deal with than bringing in CMLL talent and trying to get people excited for that. I can't get excited for that. What's on the pole? That's what she said. Or in the case of some people here, it might be, what pole? Where's the pole? Pair Jake with Killswitch in the future. Let's just wait and see if Killswitch can come back. He was very, very sick. I have not heard any updates on him, but he had double pneumonia in his lungs, and that's a tough thing to come back from. I just hope he's able to come back at all. Yuri says, who even is in the booking committee around Tony Khan? Well, we know he brought in Jennifer Pepperman. She was a writer in WWE. She does a lot of work with Mercedes, but she writes for other talents as well. So we know she's on the team. Will Washington, I believe, is part of the process there. He used to work for Fightful. So he's behind the scenes. I don't know how much people like Jeff Jarrett or Sanjay Dutt or Tony Schiavone might have input into the creative process. I don't know. Clearly, some of the talents have input as well, which is not always a good thing. But ultimately, it's Tony Khan. This is his product. This is his vision of what he wants the product to be. Just as it was with Vince McMahon, he had a gazillion writers. It was Vince McMahon's vision of what he wanted the product to be. Paul Levesque right now. Whether or not you like the WWE product, a lot of it all boils down to the vision of Paul Levesque. And if there's something he doesn't like, he'll say no. And if there's an idea that he does like, then we'll see it on TV. The buck stops with him. Nothing gets through onto your television screen without his approval. And it's no different with Tony Khan. You take the credit, you take the blame. That's how it works. Jeremy Thunderstrikes, buy or sell, perfect against Omega, Rick Rude against MJF. Oh, I'm going perfect Omega. That's an easy one. Kenny Omega and Prime Mr. Perfect? Hell yeah. Friday night is the next time I will be live right here on the channel. We're going to talk SmackDown as the Women's United States Championship Tournament continues. We'll see what happens with the Bloodline stuff heading into War Games, which is not this weekend, but next weekend after that. So come back here on Friday night. We'll talk SmackDown. Any other breaking news that there might be. And if you missed it, you can go back and check out the Raw post show. We had a fun time on the Raw Review Monday night. We did one of those Sporkle quizzes, trying to figure out if I can name all of the Intercontinental Champions. I did not, but I came close. I came pretty freaking close. We'll have to do more of those in the future. Hit that like button on your way out if you have not already done so. That's the thumbs up. It does help the video out. Thank you for all of the Super Chat love tonight. I appreciate it very, very much. And I will see you back here on Friday night. So until then, be well, stay safe, and always remember, you are watching AEW television and somebody delivers a pile driver during a match. One thing that you can always count on is the fact that Excalibur will be there to let you know, pile driver!